everyone, and welcome to episode 552 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. Doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing super well. I don't know if you watched any football yesterday, but Bills played quite a game late last night. So anyway, we're not a football cast. We're a magic cast, and we got another co-hosting, Krim. Good morning, Krim. How you doing today?
Pretty good. I mean, my football team won, and currently I got a nice lead because I have, Henry as my running back. So hopefully that lead holds over for tonight.
Yeah. Anyway, today we're going to be talking mostly about Spider-Man. We have the full spoiler now. The full set is out. So we want to talk a bit about the set itself, some spoiler cards, some of the cards from the set that we think might actually be good in standard and 60 card formats, and then hopefully answer a couple of fish mail questions. So that's the overview for today. Before we get into it, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, and Card Conduit is the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more, and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use the sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed, and you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic. So it is Spider-Man time. We have the full spoiler. The set doesn't actually officially release, I think, for like 3 weeks. Pre-release is in a couple of weekends. So we get a little gap before the set actually comes out. But we have all the cards from the set. And we're going to dig into some spoilers and some of the best cards. But I got to know, before we get into all the details, now that we've seen the full set, what do you guys think of this set? Richard, I know you've been waiting for Spider-Man. What do you think now that we see the whole thing?
All right. First off, did you know pre-release is happening the same weekend as One Piece Nats, which means I can't do pre-release?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking of just like spending my Friday and going to do pre-release while in Dallas. Is there like an LGS somewhere near the convention center?
Oh, there might be.
But, well, I'm so sad because I'm like, okay, that's like the one chance to interact with these physical cards because I'm going to be playing Arachnid Man on Arena or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh my God, it's like so painful. But other than that, I think the set's great, actually. I love all the alt arts. I know what the sentiment is on the internet. I know that's not a popular opinion. So I'm curious what Seth has to say about this, but I think these like showcase treatments and the secret layers and everything, like I think they're bang on. I don't know what people are complaining about. And I don't know, man. It looks great to me. So we'll see how this shakes up. But I'm ready to collect. I hope these prices are in the gutter and no one wants them. So I can actually afford them. I'm like my Final Fantasy collection, which is actually just a bunch of like empty binder pages. Cause I'm like, damn, the price of this is ridiculous. I'm just going to wait it out. And it just keeps going up.
I have bad news for you, Richard. I think those showcase cards are still going to be super expensive.
No, but I think
just enough so that no one can be happy.
Here's my take on this. If Twitter is such a bad place for like nuanced takes, but here's my more nuanced take on this set, which is, and I also did a video on the main channel if you want to see like a 20-minute like deep delve into this, but here's the short version. My take is this, that Spider-Man, and we know this because Wizard said this, was originally supposed to be a small set that was designed for Commander, and I presume to sell super cool Spider-Man treatments. It was going to be 100 cards. There was no commons or anything. So I think that they actually achieved what I think the original goals were really well. They made really awesome Spider-Man treatments, and then they also gave Commander players a ton of options if you want to play Spider-Man as your Commander, and I think those were two of the original goals of the set. Where I think things went off the rails, and why I think the set is actually a bad Magic set, is when they tried to expand it out into a big standard set, and then you got all this weirdness of the cards not being the same on Arena as they are in paper. You have a set that isn't designed for traditional 8-card draft formats. There's only like 10 limited color pairings or 5 limited color pairings instead of 10, so it's going to be bad for traditional draft. So you have all these side effects. You ended up with a million Spider-Man, which I think is also kind of funny. I think having 40 Spider-Man in the set makes the set worse. I think the original original idea was to line it up with a Spider-Verse movie launch that was supposed to come out, but then that got delayed to like 2027. And now we have this set with like 40 different obscure Spider-Man. And people like me who aren't big Spider-Man fans are just like scratching their heads and like, why are there so many Spider-Man? I don't understand what's going on. So I think all of those things are what I think makes for a bad Magic set, even though I think a lot of the individual designs in the set are really cool, and I think that the showcase treatments are dead on. I think they nailed it out of the park. So I think it's a bad set that is going to be very successful, if that makes sense.
What?
I mean, I was with you till that last statement.
By any traditional, traditional metrics of what would make good for a good Magic set, that working the same on digital as in paper and things like that, this set is a hard fail, but yes. I still think it'll sell well just because the treatments are so cool that I'm not sure any of the traditional metrics matter. Like, I don't know if people care that it doesn't work on Arena. I don't know if they care. I think they just want shiny Spider-Man and they got a lot of them.
I have to imagine, though, like, as someone who doesn't know comic books, like, I could see what you're talking about because, like, oh, there's, what is this, Spider-Man 2099, you know, Spider-Man this, Spider-Man that, right?
It feels to me, and let me see if this is a fair criticism of this, and I'm curious what you guys think. I think Wizards has done a really good job with, like, Final Fantasy and Lord of the Rings. Having there be some sort of like narrative or lore or story to the set, like you really got to see the story of Lord of the Rings and Lord of the Rings, even Final Fantasy, they somehow managed to take 15 games, put them all together into one set, and it still had like flavor and lore to it. To me, when I look at Spider-Man, I just see a scattering of Spider-Man with no rhyme or reason. It's just like a million Spider-Man from different places. I don't see any like lore or story. Is that, am I missing something because I don't know Spider-Man, or does it come across that way to you guys at all? Like, is there a lack of that in the set making it feel kind of scattered?
I mean, I don't know of a story, like other than like them specifically picking out specific like arcs, right? Like the Clone Saga and all these things, right? But I feel like this is kind of the same, is it not, as just like a Final Fantasy set, except for Final Fantasy was a bigger set. You get to see a little bit of every game. Spider-Man, you know, like for me, it feels like you're just getting a bunch of different characters from different games, right? When you think about like the different variants of Spider-Man. So to me, it doesn't feel any different, really. It's just that like one is very much so more obviously like, hey, Final Fantasy VII. This is Final Fantasy VI, right? And whereas this is like, do you know that where this Peter Parker, like, which timeline this is from? Do you know that Ben Reilly is Peter Parker that isn't a variant, or maybe
spoilers.
Is like a clone? Okay. All right. Well, you know, whatever. Whatever. You've had since the 90s to read it, okay? He's got the cutoff tee, all right? That tells you what era it's from, okay? So.
So I will say, so I think I agree with Seth. I think this is exactly Final Fantasy, except Final Fantasy was the greatest draft format of all time, and this one doesn't even have a draft format.
Pick two, Richard. Pick two.
Yeah, so find three friends. You guys don't know the story of Pick Two, it's basically a new draft format where you draft with four people, right? It's half of a normal pod, and you get two cards at a time. And they said it's an exciting new way to draft, but they just, like, hack this together because the set is too small, right? So I highly doubt it will be good. No one will actually want to draft it because you have to draft it on Arena and then you don't even get the Spider-Man cards. So, but outside of those, you know, outside of that aspect of it, like the digital version sucking and draft is probably going to suck. Like, what are the odds that it's the greatest draft format of all time? It's like pretty low. Other than that, everything is the same. I think the biggest problem people have is that there's 100 Spider-Man and Peter Parkers. That is a blessing in disguise, okay? So here's the problem with Magic the Gathering. 99% of the characters I don't care about. Who are all these random legendary people on this planes or whatever, right? What you really need is the One Piece approach of like every set has 10 Luffy's and 10 Nami's. And if your favorite character is, say, Luffy, you have an actual meta tier one representation somewhere in the sea of 20 Luffy's, right? Like, you know, you don't have to, like, when's the last time Liliana was playable? You know, I have to go back decades or something, right? Whereas if they just spammed Liliana every single set on different variations of cards, then I would have a playable one somewhere and I could play it. And I don't know, right? Like, people are like, oh, you should add a title that differentiates them. But, like, at some point, you forget them all. Like, tell me what all the Alesha titles are. Tell me what all the Tybalt titles are. You don't remember, right? And you're just like, I don't know, the two drop that throws away your hand, right? Or, like, the party Jace, right? Like, you know, yeah. We just associate
funny
their
that that's
abilities
just his name
with them, which, I don't know, Magic players don't seem to, they're like, what? Which Peter Parker is it? It's going to be the two drop that flips into a four or whatever, right? So that's how we do it. But I would rather have a set full of Peter Parkers and Spider-Man that people actually want than insert like C-tier cards. You know, like here's this character that showed up once in a comic somewhere from like 8,000 years ago. And here they are, right? Like no one wants that card.
All right. Two questions about that. So one is aren't some of those Spider-Men exactly that, though? Like, aren't they obscure characters that showed up in one comic
book
that no one
wants?
You gotta
have some of them, right? Like yeah, you know, you gotta accommodate for the long tail, but you don't, like, Magic sets are 99% obscure characters, you know? Like, you have your three Chase characters, like, somehow, you know, Kellen arrived here and he has a cowboy hat, and then the other 99% are random legendaries that don't have any backdrop fleshed out or anything. They're just like, oh, I don't know, I'm important, I'm legendary, and I'm here. And you're like, yeah. What's the point of that? Just give me Liliana variation 600, right? Like, why not, right? Like, what is the point of this, right?
I think I agree with you to some extent, but I think that Spider-Man just went too far with it. So I think having more than one version of a character, I think, makes a lot of sense, especially for Universes Beyond sets where, in a Magic set, Wizards can always be like, wow, Liliana's really popping off. People love her. Let's put more Lilianas in future sets. But with Universes Beyond sets, Wizards doesn't have the option to just be like, oh, next set we'll make some more Sephiroths, or we'll make some more Frodos, or we'll make some more Spider-Men. So I think it makes sense. I think Spider-Man just went too far, though, because there are the set's like 180 cards, and 44 of them have Spider in their name. Like, we're talking, that's just so many. That's like a third of the set almost has Spider in the name. So I could see if there were 10 Spider-Man, maybe I'd be like, okay, that's a lot, but I get it. But like 44 variants out of 180 unique cards is just, to me, that's just like too much of a good thing. Maybe they weren't putting enough of the same character before, but I feel like this went too far that
this
direction.
This is a good criticism covering for the guy that can't pronounce a single card name.
Yeah, I know, it would make my life easier.
Now you just gotta learn how to say Spider-Man, and then you've got all the cards.
I don't know if I can handle that, Richard. I don't know if I can handle that. It's a tricky word.
There's only actually three Peter Parker-related things, by the way. There's a lot of spider men and whatnot, and spider in the name.
Women,
right?
And so, children, and yeah,
sure,
there's
but that,
a
that
lot
is,
of them.
That is actually lore, though, right? Like, that is actually lore. That's why things like this make sense to the comic book reader. And I think that, more importantly, I think I've stated this before, I don't like Peter Parker as a comic book character. I actually love the world that is around him, and this is mainly the villains. So, and I love the villains and his variants, and I always thought that they are, like, more interesting as characters when it comes to the writing. And so, you go ahead.
Let me ask you about that, Grim. I'm glad you brought up the villains, because this is not one of my big criticisms of the set, because I haven't spent a ton of time thinking about it. But one thing I've heard from some people is they felt like the villains didn't really get their due in the set. And that there's some cool villains in there, but the set could have actually went harder on the villain end of things and maybe had a few less Spider-Man. Do you think that the set represented the villains of Spider-Man that you love so much enough, or could there have been even more focus on the villains, perhaps?
I think it's a good spread, because 40 spider people, spider folk, the Legion of Spiders, if you will, like, great. And then they also gave us, like, and I know some people are going to think to themselves, like, this isn't a deep cut, but I would say that the average person probably does not know Mr. Negative, right? The average person does not know.
Maybe.
I mean, yeah, Marvel Snap probably helped with that, right?
That was a top-tier meta deck, and I don't know exactly who he is now.
Like, Mr. Negative shows up there and, like, in a few Spider-Man games and, like, maybe an animated show, right? That's about it, and he's, like, one episode. I think that we're getting a lot of love for the Spider-Man villains, and I'm talking we're also getting the deep cuts like Superior Spider-Man. So as a comic book fan, there's a lot here for me to love. Now, I can obviously understand that, like, Magic players are going to look at Morlun, and you know, the average person has no idea who Morlun is, right? Like, and I will also just assume that Magic players will be like, oh, cool, vampire guy that drains the table, right? Like, dope.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of, like, characters here that you wouldn't normally see, and I can really appreciate that. Now, if you're a comic book reader, you're thinking Agent Venom. Everyone knows Agent Venom. Yes, Agent Venom is a household in the comic books. I think that is true. I think the average person does not know who that is, or Anti-Venom. Again, not in Marvel Snap, right?
I don't know what that is. Not in Marvel Snap, Krim.
Go ahead, Seth. I was going to say, I will also say that part of this might be just my expectations. Because when I heard Spider-Man, I'm not a comic books guy, so I don't know. I didn't even know Spider-Man was a multiverse until we got to spoiler season. So when I heard Spider-Man,
that is shocking.
I was assuming that we would have Peter Parker, the Spider-Man that I know of, or like a Spider-Man fighting against like villains. And then this ended up being a whole bunch of Spider-Man that I didn't know existed. So maybe part of it was just the expectation I had. Maybe I had the wrong expectation of the set, which was Spider-Man versus iconic villains. And it ended up being lots of Spider-Man versus some of the iconic villains.
Let me ask
so maybe
you
it's
something
partly
here.
A me thing.
Yeah, it might just be like people's, like, again, this is where unfamiliarity with the IP could be something different right now. I know some will be like, well, I didn't like this IP and I love that set. And I think this is where you just play the set and you will find out through there. But at a first glance, I'm sure, like, example, there's UBs I didn't like. I didn't like Fallout. I didn't know a single thing about Fallout. We don't like Lord of the Rings. I know that. But we like the cards,
so
right?
That was good. Yeah.
I mean, I like some of the cards. I think a lot of the cards are kind of poo-poo still. But, like, I think that in time, when people play this set, I think there will be a lot more to enjoy, and you'll see why. Some of this might seem generic, right? Like, let's say Spider-Woman Stunning Savior. This is one of those things. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it in a few seconds. Main thing here is I think this set has a lot to chew on, like a lot to like if you are a comic book fan. I can understand why you wouldn't like it if you don't know anything about it, though.
Let me ask you one last question. Or go ahead, Richard, and then I'll get to my question.
Oh, I was going
to
say, piggybacking off what Krim said, right? So we're Magic players. We don't care about lore, really, okay? We just play with, like, pieces of cardboard, okay? And we have famously stated that we would just play blank pieces of cardboard with rules text on it. And one criticism I've heard echoed many times is that if you strip away the special treatments, the Spider-Man IP, all of that, and you're just like, you know, these are just generic cards, people say the set still sucks. They're like, you know, if you remove all the Universe Beyond stuff from it, just look at the mechanics, look at what the cards are doing and what they're trying to do, set sucks. Do you guys agree with that?
That's where I find it very interesting. I don't agree with that, only because, so I loved Edge of Eternities. I don't know if you all did, but
yep.
That old set, yes. I love Edge of Eternities, and it's because the mechanics that came from that set were kind of like reimagined or like reworked existing mechanics, right? Like, so we had, you know, Evoke, but redone, right? We had, Revolt, but, you know, turned into Void. I have really liked Magic going back and then just kind of like, or just going and doing, improving or making new versions of older mechanics. So seeing web slinging kind of just be like this different version of ninjutsu and like mayhem, a balanced version or a different version of madness, I've really liked that. And I think that's actually got some really sweet design, like really well-designed cards in here, down to the lands, right? We've got the lands that have some of the set mechanics, but just without the actual keyword on it. And, okay, I will say that Connive, like, only hits for me because it's villains, right? Villains conniving, I think that
they're
hits.
Conniving, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if you take that away and you make it just a blank square, they're it's just like, okay, is this a Capenna card? I don't understand. But like, regardless, I like that mechanic for the set, but that's because of flavor. But when you look at the other two mechanics, too, like the main mechanics, I think they're fun. And then on top of that, we actually have some really cool cards in here. Like we've talked about, like Hydro Man, Molten Man. I think there's a lot, like, you know, the Elemental Men, if you will. Like I think they're all very interesting to me. And there's a lot of fun cards here that are, they're very nuanced in how they're sweet. They're like a few gears, just like a few knobs turned only slightly, but that's all the difference to me.
This is a really interesting question for me because I think I kind of end up in the middle. So on one hand, let's assume this set was blank pieces of cardboard. I actually really like a lot of the individual designs and mechanics in the set. There's a lot of, Krim mentioned Hydro Man, the Electro Man, Doc Ock's Tentacles. There's a bunch of just like cool individual cards that I think were neat, whether or not they were Spider-Man or not. So on that side, I think the set actually would be fine, even if it wasn't Spider-Man. Where it falls apart for me, though, is specifically in Commander. And mostly because of color identity issues, it blows my mind that we got a set that is literally themed after spiders with 44 cards with spider in the name that offered almost nothing to Ishkana or Shelob or like traditional iconic magic sets, because Wizards seemingly just didn't take into account that in magic spiders are green and to a lesser extent Golgari, and they made Mary Jane a Selesnya card, so you can't play it in any of the magic spider decks. It seems the set feels like it's on an island to me, and the one thing that kind of saves that is since they're Spider-Man, it makes sense that their colors are different to some extent, but if they were blank pieces of cardboard or had magic IP and I got a whole set full of spiders that I literally could not play with the most iconic spiders in Magic's history, I would be like, yeah, that's kind of bad.
Okay, we gotta like actually, okay, like, okay, this, it's wrong that Spider-Man and Ishkana are in the same deck. Okay, they should not have the yes. spider typing, right? Like, if you just think about it for a second, they're technically spiders, but they're spiders from different universes and like totally different. So I don't like the idea that people are like, wow, we have all these spiders. I'm like, no, these people have four limbs. They don't have eight limbs, okay? Like, they're
sometimes
not actually,
they have four limbs.
They're yeah. not the same spiders. Like, when you think of like Ishkana spiders, right? So I don't buy that argument, but I can see. I can see people expecting Spider-Man support or something, but like nothing happens. I will say, back to the original question, I actually agree with the original sentiment that the set probably sucks. without
Whoa,
all the
really?
Special skinning.
The
IP. So I actually thought about this very hard this weekend, okay? Because, you know, the meme is Richard says everything's unplayable trash, and I'm like, okay, am I actually being lazy? I swear to God, I think about it, and then, like, it turns out to be unplayable trash, right? So if you take a standard deck, okay? Standard deck is 60 cards, okay? We'll take the average deck, 24 lands, 36 cards. So 36 cards are non-lands. You play four of everything, usually, right? That's 9 unique cards for your deck. Okay, half of it is some bread and butter stuff like removal, sweeper, interaction, something that no one actually cares about. Your deck is actually just like 3 to 4 cards if you really think about it, right? Like, think of yeah. the Vivi deck. It's like 2 cards, right? It's really just Vivi, Cauldron, you know, maybe some of the looting cards, right? But like, that's basically the deck. It's like 4 cards, right? And everything else is part of the deck, but it's not things we write home about, right? Like this random like 2-drop removal, you know, Into the Flood mod, it's a bounce spell. Like in our minds, they're interchangeable. Same with like, you know, the dual lands, the fetch lands, you know, whatever, right? They're like, yes, this set technically brought that, but like whatever, they're interchangeable. So given that a standard deck is literally like 3 to 5 cards, and let's say we're in a balanced meta of like 3 rock, paper, scissors decks, right? You have 9 to 15 cards that are playable out of the entirety of standard. So it stands to reason that most cards see zero play. Most mechanics see zero play. Where like Edge of Attorneys is a great set. If you drafted it, if you play standard, like you see nothing from Edge anywhere. So I don't know. I think Spider-Man falls in line with that. Like, you know what I mean? Like most of the cards will see no play. You might see web slinging show up in one card somewhere. Or you might not. And like, that's kind of it, right? You're not going to see a deck with like every web slinging card jammed into it. So like, yeah. it's kind of just standard for standard. So I don't know, right? So yeah, most of the cards will suck and we'll see no play. And it's really the special art treatments. And if you find them cool for Commander, and that's what 2025 Magic is all about. And on those metrics, Spider-Man seems fine, right? So I don't know, right?
Even I agree with that. Like, I'm the person who thinks the set is actually like a bad set, and I think the treatments are still going to make this set do incredibly well, because I think they nailed it with the treatments, they nailed it with the comic book cards, and I, like I said before, I really blame a lot of it on the last minute changes. Like, some people are like, oh, does this mean all the Marvel sets are going to have issues? I'm like, no, I don't think so. Like, I really think that what happened was they built a little Commander set to sell these special treatments, and then had to switch into a big Standard set, and of course the draft format's going to suffer. Of course, like, that's going to lead lead to issues and padding out of the set with some designs that maybe you weren't going to use. Like, if you ever hear a best of album by a band where they're like, they have their best songs and then they like to put a couple like, oh, here's like a cutting room floor song that we never actually released as one of the final tracks. And a lot of times, like once in a while, the song's really cool. But a lot of times you're like, I can see why you never put that on one of your actual albums. Like, there was a reason yeah. that was on the cutting room floor. And I think that maybe that happened with some of the Spider-Man cards where you're like, we need 100 extra cards stat, and you got to make it work somehow. So anyway, let's talk about some of the individual cards from the set. We got a bunch of them. We're never going to get through all of them. But Richard, why don't you guide us through some Spider-Man cards?
All right. Full set is out. And I believe we're getting the arena versions sometime today.
So this week, I think, or maybe today. Yeah,
we can do the full mapping here. I don't know. We want to do like commander cards. Okay, but we'll go Mr. Negative because Mr. Negative is like kind of a cool card.
That card's cool.
Seven drop Orzhov, unplayable in standard unless you're reanimating it. 5/5 human villain vigilance lifelink. Dark Force Inversion. When Mr. Negative enters, you may exchange life totals with target opponent. If you lost life this way, draw that many cards.
This card's so busted.
That card's sick, right? Like, yeah. I have definitely, you know, like, okay, yeah, in standard, I don't know if I'm playing this unless it's, like you had mentioned, a reanimate deck. Even then, I don't know if I'm reanimating this as opposed to, like, Val'Govoth or something like that.
And it gets shut down by Screaming Nemesis' ability if that happens. Screaming so there's a bunch of ways it's awkward in standard, yeah.
but as a magic card, I think this is really cool in design space. Like the enters ability. Somebody on Blue Sky responded to me. They're like, okay, I think this card is sweet, but imagine if it had this treatment, essentially. And they made it so that because who he is in design and whatnot, the colors and everything is inverted and whatnot. What if this was like a white bordered card? What if this is the only card that was white bordered in standard?
Oh, they should have did that.
Oh, that would have been
cool.
That
would have been cool, right?
I think that would have been super cool.
But okay, unfortunately, now that I've been shown that, I can't unsee it and it looks so sweet. But regardless, I think this card does have a lot of fun design space with it just being an enters ability, not a cast ability. I think this is going to be a very fun one in Commander because I've already built a deck for it and I cannot wait.
I mean, this is the first time we've ever had a life swap enters trigger before. We've never had that. And we've had life swapping going all the way back to the earliest days of Magic with what Mirror Universe or whatever, that old artifact. And that opens up some really cool plays because it works so well with Blink. I imagine how you play this. I don't know how you build your deck, Grim, but if you play this and swap life totals with your opponent and then Blink it and swap back, it's not only a life swap card, but it is a mass card advantage engine. It's almost like a peer through the abyss or something where you can easily be drawing 15 cards in one shot or something once you start blinking this. So I think the card's super cool. I don't think it'll work in standard, but it's one of the most interesting commander cards from the set. And maybe if the meta shifts, I could imagine a world like a 5/5 lifelink vigilance that gains you some life. Like I could maybe imagine a world where I reanimated this in standard, just not in the, not in the current meta.
Are they screaming Nemi you? This is just a 5/5 vigilance.
No, it's just a 5/5. You can't even swap life because that counts as gaining life.
Yeah.
Life total goes up. It's really, oh man, it's rough. Richard, I gotta ask you about a card because I've been waiting. I've been waiting ever since they spoiled this card to hear your opinion on this card. And that card is Hydro Man Fluid Felon. It's a double blue 2/2 legendary elemental villain. If you cast a blue spell and it's a creature, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn. The big ability, though, is on your end step, you untap it and it turns into a land that gains tap to add blue mana and it's not a creature anymore. So, Richard, you're the O'Hare Axelon player. You're always looking for ways to land ramp in colors like blue. How good is this? Is this part of the Richard ramp package in mono blue commander decks?
How dare you utter the name O'Hare Axelon in the same sentence as Hydro Man? It's not a land during your turn, the most important turn. It's just a 2/2 beater.
So you're
if you come to land during your opponent's turns, okay? So, yeah, it's not going to die, but it also does absolutely nothing for you on your turn. And then if for whatever reason you wrath on your turn, as you would do, it dies.
Yeah, that is true.
It's also if you have to hit double blue on turn two, you're losing the game. You can't run all the utility lands, the Karoos, all that stuff, right? So this, what's the price of this?
It
why is
dodges
it so expensive?
Evacuate. It dodges evacuate. It dodges the mass bounces that you would normally have because it's no longer a creature.
You got a grizzly bear that survived. Good job, guys. It doesn't even grow primitively. It's end of turn pumps.
This might be more of a crim card, come to think of it. Because, like, when I associate crim with leaving his mana up during your opponent's turn. I think that's the biggest power of this card, right? Is, like, during your turn, yeah, it's kind of like a medium beater for its stats. But during your opponent's turn, it's a beater that lets you leave up a spell pierce or a whatever, an offer you can't refuse. Some sort of, you can flash in a creature using that mana.
It has to tap. Oh, you get to untap it. You get to
it does untap. It does untap. So you can't attack.
You can get in there with your 2/2 bear. I'm sorry. I misread.
Krim, can this be a standard card? Is there any world where, like, in a flash deck, I thought of control, but then I was like, well, in control, you're probably just going to wrath it away yourself eventually. But,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
in some sort of flash deck or something, could this be a standard card?
I kind of like it in some kind of like flash deck or some very much so like a tempo play style, do nothing on my turn, something on yours. I like this. I think this is a very intriguing design in both like standard and in commander, right? And obviously in commander, you can do a lot with a card like this because it dodges so much like sorcery-based removal. So I kind of love this card. I think this is a very interesting one. Yeah, blue is intense and... Sure, maybe if I'm not firing off 50 different spells, because it only gets +1/+1 if you cast a blue spell, so it can't be like artifacts or anything like that.
Prowess
but
for
it,
blue.
It is, yeah, blue prowess, which means, I mean, I don't know if you're in like a deck that's loaded with the Spyglass Pirates and things like that.
Yeah. Sirenswarm Tamer, cheap cantrips maybe. Like you, I mean, really, if you cast one blue spell, it's a 2-mana 3/3. If you cast two, it's a 4/4. That doesn't seem that unrealistic. I think
and then
being legendary
it pays
does
itself
fit.
Off. All right, like it pays it back, like to Teferi.
Yeah, it is. It is basically prowess. I think it's one of the coolest designs in the set. I don't know if it actually makes it as like a staple anywhere. I'm gonna mess around with it in Commander, especially if I'm like a Crim deck where I'm trying to cast stuff at instant speed. I don't think I just play in any deck as a ramp spell because, as Richard said, not being ramped during your turn is kind of awkward if you're not playing at instant speed. But in the right deck, I still think it could be pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah,
I can't believe you guys made me say this. Play Arcane Signet. Play Arcane Signet.
Wow, you
this will dodge.
If Richard's telling you to play Arcane Signet.
The exact fears you have, though, right? With Arcane Signet.
It dies to your own wrath anyway. Like, it doesn't even help you. At least your Arcane Signet will dodge your All's Dust. All right, how about this one? I think this one is actually intriguing for Commander. Villainous Wrath. 3 black sorcery. Target opponent loses life equal to the number of creatures they control, then destroy all creatures. A little Rakdos charm action. Yeah.
I think this is really cool. I think this card is really cool. Yeah.
I think it's definitely Commander playable. When I think of Wrath in Commander in black, it's so funny because I think of black is a great removal color, but when you look at black sweepers, it's kind of like Toxic Deluge, Damnation, and then you're down to either the expensive ones that have upside like Decree of Pain or to like Crux of Fate. So I think for me, this slots in is like Black Wrath number 3. I think Toxic Deluge, Damnation still probably ahead of it, but I think this might be the one that I play, discounting like the Decree of Pain, which I still play in some decks, but discounting the expensive rest. It might
eat
maybe 4 then. Maybe 4, but it's like somewhere in that tier. It's just outside of the top tier, but I still think it's very playable. And this card's really scary, right? Because you just like take out the token player. Like if you have someone that's just popping off and going live, this can just straight up kill them, like we've seen with Rakdos Charm.
Do you remember when we played, was it that episode of Commander Clash, and Tomer half did his combo, and because Phil had Ghostly Prison,
he
couldn't kill Phil, so he just had a board full of stuff? This
would have killed him.
Is the old Rakdos Charm target you when you Splinter Twin me? You know what I mean? So, like, I think there's going to be a lot of funny moments that will come from this card, at least in Commander, and... I don't know. In standard, there's what, 3 cards on board, maybe 4 cards. People know not to overcommit, so to pay 5 to make someone lose 3 isn't going to hit, right? But I think Commander, this is sweet.
I feel like in standard, I just value deadly cover-ups like extraction, yeah. getting rid of yeah. all the VVs or the cauldrons or something, over dealing a bit of damage. But I still think it's like, it's fine. If we shift to a meta where like Boros Convoke or something yeah. is one of the most popular decks, it could be a funny way to like get the go wide decks if that becomes a thing in standard.
Randomly Boros Convoke 8.
You like Wrath, Richard.
Your 4-mana Wrath.
I mean, you'll play this, right, Richard, or no? Will you play this in Commander?
No. It's the meme card. So if you have a token player in your play group and you want to get saucy, you shove this in. But this is like a terrible Wrath in a vacuum, right? Because Seth said it, right? Toxic Deluge, Blasphemous
Damnation.
I don't even play Damnation.
Right? Oh, you don't even play Damnation.
No, because you got to play Boom Pile. You got to play all his.
Oh,
you got to
right,
play
right,
the actual
right,
real
right.
sweeper.
I forgot about the Boom
right?
Pile.
But then
yeah.
you can also just play the Decree of Pains, the you know the things that just like take everyone's graveyard, draw a million cards, whatever. Right. So 5-mana Wrath isn't where it's at. I didn't want to play 4-mana Wrath. So I don't really like this card.
Richie
but
doesn't
it is
want
funny.
To Wrath.
It is funny.
It is.
Arachnos
it
card
is
a funny card. It's like Mana Tide. Should you play it? No. But it's funny. You can put in your deck for some meme value, right?
I got to ask you guys about another card because I haven't heard people talking about this card, but I feel like this is sneakily maybe like the most playable card in the set. And that card is Hide on the Ceiling. Hide on the Ceiling Ooh. Is blue and X for an instant. This says exile X target artifacts into creatures. Return the exiled cards to the battlefield under their owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So when you first read this card, you're like, oh, it's like a blink effect, right? I can blink my stuff. I get to reuse their ETB triggers. I can save my team from a Wrath. If someone goes to Wrath, I cast this instant. Speed, I blink out my stuff, it comes back end step. I dodge getting hit by Villainous Wrath or whatever that card we were just talking about was. But what
Thank
people
you,
miss
Spider-Man.
About this card is it targets your opponent's stuff as well. So if your opponent has any token, it just kills them. You can blink out the tokens. If your opponent has a Chalice of the Void, or maybe an Agatha Soul Cauldron with a VV under it, you can blink it and reset it by getting rid of the counters, by getting rid of the VV forever. So this card is actually absurdly flexible because most of these effects only target your own stuff. Am I overrating this card? I feel like this card is like a staple in Commander, like second behind the Blue March is like the best board yeah. protection spell in Blue and Commander. And I actually feel like it has a lot of constructed implications as well.
I think exactly for those reasons, except for March phases out, right, which can be nice, but like this giving you the ETBs again could be pretty big, right?
Yeah.
So a thank you again, Spider-Man. But then also in standard, I fully think that is exactly what's going to be used for, like being able to, example, blink out Quantum Riddlers. Yep. And your warp cards, and then also saving people from like cauldrons, right? Like I'd be like I don't know whether it's blinking the cauldron, getting you know baiting the player into exiling their VV, and then blinking it out is going to be the way I'm going to be using this a lot, while also getting like Quantum Riddler nonsense going again. Also, because of that deck relying on like Prof's Eidetic Memory and things like that, you can also reset the big creatures.
Which is actually kind of relevant in the instant speed. Sometimes you have like a 12-12 Tursa that's attacking you, or Steam Court yeah. Scholar, and even just using it to like fog and get rid of those counters might be enough to swing the game. But what do you think, Richard?
I didn't know we were being sponsored by Spider-Man today. Like, what's with all this Spider-Man cope? Like, okay, first of all,
what?
It won't exist, okay? But let's say it does, right? Into the Flood Maw does everything you want and, like, way better. I think
but
the
then
meta
you
vision
blink your own Riddler.
Sure, but, like, it's one mana
but that's
versus
a real game plan.
At least 2, 3, 4, you know, however, you know, you're like, oh, I'm gonna blink out my whole team because, yeah, I'm just going to pass with 4 mana up and, like, blink out my team. You know, like, I don't know. I feel Into the Flood Maw does what you want it to do at 1 as opposed okay. to 2 mana, right? And I guess sometimes you're going to get this for 3 or 4, but, like, is it really going to be relevant? So I feel you're not actually going to use this. I mean, is there a world where you can use it? Like, yes, but I feel mana efficiency of Flood Maw beats this. Until that thing rotates,
that's,
then we got,
that's fair.
You know.
Hear me out, Richard. You play both. Because you don't have to play one or the other, right?
Cards or a 2-2 split? Or what are we doing here?
I would probably do like a 3-2 split, to be honest with you. Because, like, as someone who, I'm not going to lie to you, right? I love Vivi, so I've been making sure to extra jam as much of that deck as I can in standard, just in case gets, you know, any you know, any ban hammers start happening. So I've been jamming that deck extra. And it's so fun. But yeah, like, I think High to the Ceiling, I'd be willing to try one to two copies for that exact reason. I think it's going to be very good. And, you know, hey, turns out you can make a ton of extra mana. And with Vivi and all this other stuff, it also gives you some pretty big value there.
It also doesn't hit enchantments, which Flood Maw does.
I mean, the other...
Right?
I mean,
right. No. Fully agree.
That's true.
Fully agree.
That's true. The other thing you can do, though, is just, like, blink out your opponent's defenses and Alpha Strike too, which is, we didn't really talk about that. So what about Commander, Richard? Do you play this like a march to, like, if you're playing mono, if you don't have the white protection spells, you can't play T-Pro and stuff, not worth it to try to, like, save your team from a Wrath?
You have March. Like, who's going to have, like, four march. Mana or whatever to save three things, right? Like, it's
yeah,
way
I guess
too,
it is
the whole point of March is you can pitch cards, right, to make it a one mana thing. It's kind of like Clever Concealment, right? If Clever Concealment actually costs four real mana, like, no one would play it, but it actually like, it's free, right? So I would play it in a blink deck or something, like, blink, because the white has a lot better blinking cards, but I don't know, maybe just mono blue you might need it, but I wouldn't use it as generic protection.
Interesting.
Who should we talk about? Morlin? Devourer of Spires.
Crib had a couple you wanted to get to. What card did you want to get to, Crib?
Okay. So there's a few I wanted to talk about, and I think one of them is actually going to be Scarlet Spider Ben Reilly that I talked a lot about earlier. And Ben Reilly, not spoilers, Richard, he's got the cutoff, okay? This tells you it's from the 90s. This tells you how long you've had to know who this is.
Okay. So Scarlet Spider is, like, my favorite Spider-Man, like, universe character. Of comic books, like, number one, X-Men. Number two is Spider-Man. And I read during the Clone Saga era or whatever, and actually, Scarlet Spider, Ben Reilly's my favorite person.
Yeah. Usually, if you were around and reading it in the 90s, this is your guy, right? So he's pretty sweet. And like, I think he comes through in the design here. I think he's got a lot of power to him. He's one red and a green. He's a 4/3 with web slinging for red green, and then has trample. And then has, if Scarlet Spider was cast using web slinging, he enters with X-1/1 counters on him, where X is the mana value of the returned creature. So obviously, the Timmy in me is like, oh, what if I warp in this 9-mana artifact, 9/9, and I bounce this back to my hand, right? And, like, yeah, obviously, I'd love to do that. I just want to say that's 5 mana and totally realistic, okay? But I do think, let's just say that if I decided to use Llanowar Elf or something like that, to tap it and then web sling it back, play the Llanowar Elf again, and now I have a 2-mana 5/4 with trample, I think that's still really good. I think there's a lot of play here in standard. I think this card has a lot of power and can definitely, like, play nicely with the warp cards. I genuinely think the warp cards do entirely change everything about this.
Interesting. I didn't really consider playing it with warp. I thought it was good just because of, like, synergizing with Llanowar Elf. I did worry that, like, maybe consistency would be an issue because we don't have another 1-mana dork in standard, but, like, the dream is obviously turn 1 Llanowar, turn 2 tap the Llanowar, pick it up, play this, and you have a mana to replay the Llanowar. So you have a 5/4 trampler and your Llanowar still on the battlefield on turn 2. That's a really fast start. I almost, to the point where I was wondering, like, could I play this in older formats where I actually can play 8-mana dorks, 12-mana dorks? Could this be a Pioneer card or something? Like, is there a chance that it's, like, good enough there? I see Richard laughing.
Pioneer, maybe.
It's Tarmogoyf.
It's
big. It tramples.
It has trample.
We
baby.
Always
you have. Mana 5/4, but you need the dork. Look, in older formats, you can play, like, Noble Hierarch or whatever, the gunned one as well, and then it would attack as a 6/5.
That's insane!
It is
actually insane!
And then it gets Fatal Pushed, and then here we go, right?
No, wait! No. It's because Fatal Push isn't like Void. They got to trigger their
own. They
got to
crack
revolt.
That fetch, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Got to crack that fetch. But I actually think it's a legit card. It's like, even if you don't do any of these shenanigans, 3-mana 4/3 trample, it's not like the most terrible like consolation prize. So I believe we had the prototype card still. The prototype cards would go hard with this too. I don't know if there's any actual good warp cards that like the Nova Hellkite, but this is like way too much at this point.
Yeah, it's like 5 mana to actually warp a Nova Hellkite and then web sling it. Maybe you're just picking up like you're missing outs. Like that's the other direction, right? We've seen Ninjutsu be used to like reuse ETB triggers. So maybe you're just trying to reuse ETBs on FOMO and things like that.
So far, the web slinging cards all have a pretty good cost to them. So like it's a pretty big reduction, right? Like Ben Reilly only being 2 mana. Another card I think we should talk about in the web slinging vein is Arachne, Psionic Weaver.
Is that the Thalia one?
Yeah. But like, I think that's really sweet. You for 1 mana, right? So Arachne, for those that don't know, is 2 and a white, web slinging for 1 white. As Arachne enters, look at an opponent's hand, then choose a card type other than creature. Spell of the chosen type costs 1 more to cast. Now, it says you can't name creature, but imagine you just name something like artifact. There are artifact creatures. So, or you could name enchantments, right? And then that would make it so Fear of Missing Out costs 3 instead of 2. And that's all the difference in this world of, like, you know, 3 mana. Like, 3 mana is, like, topping out of the curve for some decks, right? So I think there's actually a lot of play to this card. And also, she's a 3-3.
I think this card's really good. I'm just not sure how it lines up with, like, does it line up enough with the current meta, depending on, like, what you're up against? Like, what do you name against Dimir or against, like, Mono Red or something that's going to give you enough value out of it? So I think it might be a little bit, like, metagame or matchup dependent, but I think it is, like, close to Thalia's power level. And we have definitely seen Thalia be a card exactly like that, right? Like, in the right meta, Thalia is an easy 4 of main deck staple and one of the most important cards in the format. And then other metas, Thalia is like a sideboard card or kind of fringe because it just doesn't line up. So I don't know. What do you think? Does it line up well enough with the current standard meta that this is like a main deck card?
The web slinging is what makes it good. Like, we have the self-bound deck, right? The problem is it has to be a creature and it has to be tapped, right? So there's like more extra hoops. You only get a 3-3 like ground body as opposed to like a flyer, you know? So I don't know. It seems too fancy in my opinion. Like, you know, there are many cases where you're not going to web sling or you don't want to web sling. And then at 3 mana 3-3, this is not very exciting. So I don't know, but it's not the same as like Thalia, where you can just, let's say, shut off non-creatures. If they have, let's say, a sorcery or an instant, and they're both removal, then you're out of luck, right? They're just going to remove this without the tax, and then they're good to go. And it's also a
getting the hand peek is nice.
So,
the hand peek is nice.
You know, it's funny. You know the one drop you really like, Seth? The one where they exile,
the
and then they have
they
tax that thing. No.
I'm so confused. Wait, what one drop do I
like? Eternities. They choose a card.
Oh, the green one?
No, the white. And then they exile.
Oh.
Either land at Ender's Cap or
Lightstall.
Yeah. You don't get to see the hand.
I don't know if I really like that, but yeah.
You don't get to see the hand. And that's like a huge part of Thoughtseize. Like, if you don't get to see the hand, that's worth at least like 0.35 of a card or something. It's like worth a non-zero amount that I thought I'd never miss until I'm like, wait a minute. I got no game
plan.
Knowledge
is power. Knowledge is power.
You want to know something funny? I like Lightstall, but the bad news is that it has vigilance.
I know. So it's kind of anti-synergistic. You need like a vehicle or something. But speaking of spell slinging, I got to ask you about another card, Krim. I know you brought this one up, and I think this card's actually kind of overrated, but I want to hear your take on it. And it's Spider Sense. So Spider Sense, 2-mana instant, you can it's a blue card. You can web-sling it for a single blue mana. Counter-target instant sorcery or triggered ability. So when I read this card, at first I was like, oh, that's pretty sweet. It's like a counter spell. I can cast it for 1 mana. But then I was like, it's not a negate. It doesn't get Prof's Eidetic Memory. It doesn't get Agatha's Soul Cauldron. It only gets instants and sorceries. I think I'd rather just play negate because it gets those things. But I'm curious, what do you think of this card? And I think it could be good in Commander, by the way, but
I mean, being able to, like, let's just say, send back a Tishana's Tidebinder or to send back a flood pits drowner.
So we're looking at reusing ETB shenanigans, yeah.
Right, right. Okay, maybe not a flood pit drowner because that has vigilance. Damn, these cards for being too power crept.
The downside of vigilance, yeah.
but like Spyglass Siren, right? And there's lots of cheap things you can bounce back and get the ETB again. So in a weird way, you're paying one mana, you stifle. Let's say you trick bind somebody, right? And you get a trick bind and then you also get an ETB again. I think that's good enough. And for only one mana, it's a low mana value investment. And I think these are good cards. A lot of these cards that we've mentioned may not jump off the page. Like, they aren't like, you know, the Chase Mythic or something. But they are pieces that are good to have access to in a 3-year standard. I think a lot of these cards will play nicely when we get into what is Wizards' actual vision of what 3-year standard looks like.
I will say that a lot of my criticism of the card is just how it lines up with the current meta and not being great against Cauldron decks because it doesn't hit all the non-creature spells. So I think you're right that this could certainly have a purpose in Standard at some point in the future.
You know who I think also will have a point, a purpose in the future? This sounds funny because it sounds like we're just trying to build Death and Taxes, but our spoiler card, a Spider Woman Stunning Savior. Okay, she's just a 1 and a blue-white hybrid, 2/2 legendary with flying and Venom Blast. Artifacts and creatures your opponents control enter tapped. I think this is very cheap. I think upon us spoiling this, people been talking to each other about like, hey, maybe this could be played in Vintage and things like that too, because she is so aggressively costed and asymmetrical that I think this is very strong. It's again not flashy, it doesn't jump off the page, but it's just an effect that we need in a Standard environment as a nice sideboard piece.
I mean, we've seen Authority of the Consoles serve a big purpose in the past before we had the mouse banning, where, just having creatures enter tapped was really, really important against that deck, or you're just going to get one shot out of nowhere. So I think that it can serve a similar purpose. The downside, of course, is it dies to, a Burst Lightning, being a 2/2 creature, sure. So it's not as resilient. The upside, though, is it's an Authority of the Consoles type effect that is also a 2/2 flying attacker, so if you actually are trying to win a damage
D&T.
Race, there's, some upside there to chipping in for 2 in the air. What do you think of this one, Richard?
I think it's good. It's a 2-mana 2/2 flyer, and it's also Orzhov hybrid, so the number of homes it goes into goes up. I will say the worst part about this card is it's legendary.
Yes.
If you are relying on this thing to keep you alive, you're like, okay, look, Splinter Twin is coming, but they're going to all enter tapped. We're cool, right? You kind of want to stack these down, right? You want to put 3 of them and be like, yeah, you're going to use 3 removal spells to get through this. Having just one there is kind of fragile, especially if this is your beater. If you're playing a Death and Taxes type deck, this is your win con, right? So if you draw multiple, you can't play them and you can't just beat down. I think that's actually a really big issue with a card like this. So I don't know if we can actually make Death and Taxes work.
You just kind of spark red for Spider-Verse, Richard.
Darn
simple. Easy. I mean, I was going to actually ask you all that. That is the theme, one of the themes of the set, and a lot of Universes Beyond sets, because there's so many characters. So a huge chunk of the cards we've been talking about are legendary, the creatures. Do you think that hurts all of these cards significantly as far as Standard playability, or is it more because of the specific effect on Spider-Woman that it really would be better if it was not legendary? Does it damper your enthusiasm for all the 2-drop Spider-Men that are running around? Because there's a bunch of them.
I mean, I don't think it's a big deal because we already play Tursas in multiple, right? We play Josh's.
They loot
in
each
multiples.
Other. They loot,
they
each,
loot
other.
Each other. Fair. Fair. And some effects, I think some effects will. It'll be a detractor, right? Spider-Woman is one of those cards where she's going to be good, but she needs to be backed up by other effects. So how many redundant style cards, effects of these can we get? And then that makes up for the fact that it's legendary. So between this Authority of Consoles being in Foundations, this now gives us a little bit more variety in ways we can hate out pieces. And it also requires and taxes the opponent in a having different types of answers.
Now, maybe, you know, Voidren isn't in the format, so, you know, like, can't answer everything. But I do think that this being legendary does hurt it. Same with, like, Arachne. Arachne would be perfect if I could stack up multiple Thalia effects, right?
Yeah.
But I obviously, you know, do they want those effects in the game? I have no idea. But I think this is one of those things where it just depends on the style of effect.
I guess that's a good point, because like Peter Parker coming down to make a 2-1 token, you're kind of fine with legend ruling yourself. Plus, we have the double face legends where you can just play the backside if you're in the right deck. So some of the legends get around it pretty well, but then some of them also, it's kind of a big drawback.
I think he's going to change this rule.
I think Mark Rosewater has argued for that for years now, that he thinks legend should just be like flavor text and it shouldn't have rules implications. Yeah. He hasn't
because
won the argument.
You have multiverses, you have 8,000 Spider-Man already. Like, does it matter? And I guarantee you, if you go back to like, say, modern Jund and made Tarmogoyf legendary, I guarantee you that would not have been a deck at any point in its history. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like if you can only have one Tarmogoyf on the field, that would have just killed the deck. It would not have been a thing during its heyday. It would not have been a thing. And that's what's happening to these cards, right? And the only legendaries we see lots of play of are things that loot themselves because they kind of like self-fix their problem. But when they don't, and especially when they have like effects you want to stack, it makes it really bad. So I think Wizards is going to change this somehow. Just like back in the day, you couldn't have opposing legendaries, right? If you had a Taste the Mind Sculptor, I had a Taste the Mind Sculptor, they would bury both?
What do you mean? I would just Jace
Bellerin
and then blow up both.
We would play for removal, right? We would play for straight up removal. And then they're like, well, that didn't make any sense. But today you can do that, and that is just an egregious of a flavor fail as it is for me to have both on the same side of the board, than opposite sides of the board, right? So I think they would change it.
The history of Magic is them softening the legend rule like every 5 to 7 years. That is the history from like once there's one, no one can play another copy to, oh, well, they can each play a copy to one dies if you play a copy to each player can have a copy. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen at some point, too, especially with Wizards talking about Universes Beyond sets going to have a lot of legends just because that's how named characters work. So we're going to be getting a lot of legends in those sets.
Literally main character energy.
quite literally.
I am curious, though, because there's a few that I were running long, right? So I want to see if we could get just bunch these last bit of cards up, right? Uh-huh. And it is the lands. Oscorp Industries and Urban Retreat, they kind of like are tricolor lands, but they also have like the set mechanic, right? So Urban Retreat pretty much is web-slinging for two, and then Oscorp Industry has Mayhem. Right, because when this land enters from a graveyard, you lose two life, and well, it literally has mayhem. So, what do you think of these lands? I think these lands are really good. I think they're really cool design. It's a fun way to incorporate the set mechanic onto some sweet resources, and that are flavorful.
One of my favorite parts from the set, obviously, I think they're probably only going to be good in specific decks. Although, especially in Commander, it's important to remember that people still just play the tap tri-lands. Like, the Shards of Alara style tri-lands are still very popular if you look on EDH Rec. So I think some people in Commander will just play them as, like, a casual tap land, even in decks that don't really support its theme. But if you're in a deck for a discard deck for the Mayhem land or some sort of, like, Chulainn style deck for the Bant Ramp land, I think they're very, very good. And you can do some really explosive things with, like, Gabriel Grazer, Lana War Elves with the Bant one. So I think they're both very good, but only probably for like certain decks that support what they're trying to do.
Urban Retreat, Solemn, A plus. Oscorp Industries, I don't know, man. It's a lot of work. And I don't know that you really want to be like, if you're the type of player to play the tap tri-lands, then you're probably not the type of player that's optimizing their mana base very well. Yeah. So, like, I don't know that this matters for you.
Hey,
I'm just saying, right? Like, you can put more impactful cards in your deck. So, I don't know. I mean, they're both fine. Do you think they'll see any standard play? Like, no, right?
I think Oscorp Industries could, right? There's a lot of self-discard right now. And you're telling me I can throw away a land and still get my land drop, right? Because there's times where it's
true,
like, hey,
yeah.
Like FOMO,
pitch it to a FOMO or something.
FOMO, pitch it, put it back.
Yeah,
I think both of them. I think both of these standard play. I think they both
getting
standard
more cards.
Play.
Yay!
They're tap lands. They're tap lands.
True.
And you lose
true.
Two life. You lose two life when it comes from the graveyard. I do think, though, even let's say if the worst and most heinous act thing that could happen, which would be a banning of Vivi or Cauldron, I still think that whatever, like cards like FOMO and all of that will still be around. And I think this will just be great in there.
Oh, those cards were good before VB Cauldron was a thing. So yeah. I think, yeah, those cards will still be good. Anyway, I think that's all we really have time for. But I did want to sneak in one fishmail super quick because we didn't get to any last week. So we did get a fishmail from Goblin Ringleader at J Streepak, who was asking about Hydro Man and if it was the blue, is it growth or blue, the blue rampant growth. We already covered that. So we're going to go with a question from at InfernoMan64 says, late to ask, but how will deck techs on Arena work regarding Spider-Man? I assume it's going to be just extra explaining about what's going on between Arena and paper. Hashtag MTG Fishmail. And the answer to this is, I'm still not 100% sure the best way to handle that. My impulse is...
I know how.
How are you going to handle it, Krim? I don't think I've asked you this yet.
I'm going to just say the Spider-Man names. and that's it's that, right? Like,
how will you even remember them, though? Like, on Arena, they won't even reference the Spider-Man name whatsoever. So you need to actually remember the mapping of every single card.
Think of it like this, okay? You'll recognize, depending on which side of Spider-Man you care about. If you don't care about it, then you'll just go with whatever's on client, right? If you do care about it, you'll probably go with the Spider-Man names. And because if I, example, I have no idea who these in-universe characters are, but I do know who the Spider-Man universe characters are. So I'm going to go with the one that I naturally have been saying over the last like 30 years of my life. Right. So
I think for me, the best I've figured out so far is if we're doing something paper, the default would be the Spider-Man name. So if we're doing a podcast, it would be the Spider-Man name. Commander Clash, it's the Spider-Man name. If we're playing on Arena where it's going to be the Omen Path name, I think I have to use like the Arena name just so people know what's going on. Maybe I also try to find a way to throw up the Spider-Man card in some situations, but I think I got to go with whatever lines up with the video I'm making just to keep it from being confusing. But Richard, where do you land on this?
Oh no. So they just released the full gallery for Arena.
Huh?
Who do you want to guess? Krovoy, Envoy of the Bog. Who's Krovoy, Envoy of the Bog?
See,
who's Varilex, the Haven Skin? By the way, the spider people, they're actually like giant arachnid spider people now.
They're actually, hey.
like think Shieldred looking people, right? Like,
I'm going to have to look at the set.
I don't know, man. I'm looking at these Arena cards and it's going to be rough. It's going to be very rough. Some of them are okay, like Romantic Rendezvous. They kept the name, right? That's the name of the Spider-Man card as well. So that name is kept. But
isn't
other
the
ones,
Soul Stone, like the Terminus,
the
Terminus.
Well, the
Soul
Stone had its type changed as well, so that was a funny one. But like King of the Cold Blood Curse, Oris, Last of the Weblords, and it's like a guy sitting on like a literal giant spider. It's so funny that they actually went with like the Ishkanah style cards for Arena. It's really throwing me for a loop. It has nothing to do with superheroes. This looks nothing like superheroes or like some ripoff Spider-Man or anything. But you know, they'll be on the site soon, and they'll all work on the deck builder. So when you swap between Arena and paper. It will work, and then
that's
you two
huge.
Can get your mind blown by new and Sumi career criminals, whoever that is.
And on that note, I think we're going to have to leave it there for today. So thanks for sending in the fish mail, everyone. Richard, how do people send in future fish mail questions?
All right, hit us up at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag MTG Fishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
So that brings us to the end of episode 552 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So Richard Grimm, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsor for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of magic. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.